Welcome back to Amandla here on CKUT 90.3 FM. I'm here in conversation with our own Doug Miller, and who has just read Paul Theroux's latest novel, which is called
The Lower River.
The Lower River.
Yes.
And so we know that Paul Theroux has a history in Africa, and the novel is about Malawi in particular. So can you, Doug, give us a bit of a background on Paul Theroux?
Oh, gosh, yeah. Theroux was amongst the first of the Peace Corps that John Kennedy sent out, however long ago that was. I don't even remember. He was in Malawi before independence and was very good friends with the ministers in government, two or three at least, who fell out of favor with Kamuzu in 1964, just at the moment of independence. And he himself was deported shortly thereafter. But it was very clear from his writings and his experience that he'd had a very close and intimate experience with Malawi and was very deeply in love with its people and what it represented. He ended up with Peace Corps in Uganda with a few other Malawian exiles and eventually did this huge trip home. And over the course of time, he became quite a famous, what would you call it, travel writer? Is that the word?
Yeah.
Anyway.
It's a fair.
What was the first he wrote?
And the one that made him famous was called The Great Railway Bazaar.
Oh, yes, and which I've never read. but at about the same time, he wrote a novel about Malawi called The Jungle Lovers. And because there was almost no writing around Malawi that was oppositional, this book was very much the underground hit outside the country. There was no way you would ever want to be caught with it inside the country. You would be disposed of immediately. Anyway, this book now, The Lower River, Paul Theroux, I it was very clear from the title that it was going to be a spin-off of what he had written in The Dark Star Safari back almost 10 years ago.
So just for the readers that don't know, The Dark Star Safari is his travelogue, right?
That's a travelogue. Its subtitle is Overland from Cairo to Cape Town. And he decided it must have been some sort of midlife crisis, or a little after midlife, because he's older than me. He was gonna travel from Cairo to Cape Town without using planes, and so he managed to get all the way up the Nile to the end of Egypt. I'm not quite sure how he got into Sudan. Part of the story reminds me, but I remember every chapter as he passes through country to country, adventure by adventure, as he makes his way alone. He must have a very tolerant wife to let him just take off like that and spend a few months on the road. But there he was, traveling alone with just what he could carry on his back. And he traveled through Egypt, through Sudan, Ethiopia, Kenya, into Uganda, and then finally Tanzania, and it was interesting that it was clear that after all that travel through, must have been two thirds of Africa by then, that he was very, very happy to be coming to Malawi. He was almost lyrical in his excitement at entering the country after this long overland trip through all the other countries. And as he arrives at the Malawi border, he was exhibiting a huge sense of relief. And I'll just quote a few lines from it, you know. This is from The Dark Star Safari as he goes into Malawi. And it says, the rain let up while I walked down the road towards the Malawi side, followed by the urchins. I suppose I should have felt dismayed. It was late in the day. I was being nagged by kids and money changers and shouted at by the punks in the taxi who had put the squeeze on me. Yet I was pleased. Mbeya, the southernmost town in Tanzania, was behind me. I had not gotten stuck in Tukuyu, which is a smaller yet town almost on the Malawi border, and I had circumvented the curse of, there are bad people there. The border ahead looked lovely. I could see a range of mountains, the Republic of Malawi, a much flatter landscape in the distance. Just before dusk, the sun came out and flashed a whole gold bar pressed against the earth and then liquefied and slipped, and I followed the last of the light into Malawi. I crossed the border, 3 or 4 footsteps, striding into a different country, glad to be home again, in slap-happy Malawi, land of prostrate forests and dusty roads and even dustier faces, the 8th poorest country in the world. The amount you paid for one meal in a good American restaurant, a single Malawian earned in an entire year. Here I had encountered my first dictator, had my first dose of the clap, and had a gun shoved in my face by an idiot soldier enraged by my color. 3 somewhat unrelated events that inspired in me feelings of fear and disgust, but I had been happy here too. And perhaps for similar reasons, since the horror of near-death experiences can swell our capacity for love and fill us with a zest for life. I mean, he's a very good writer. Very vivid description.
It's certainly a very compelling image of Malawi.
Yeah.
I wonder if it's a true image.
Well, that's another story, and it's very clear when he writes about anything, it's through his eyes. Mm. I don't think he pretends to be an academic. He doesn't pretend to have a critical analysis that comes from any given perspective. He's an American traveling through and writing for his audience in America. His feelings come through, no doubt, because that's how he writes. In fact,
So in a way, sorry, just to stop
you
there. One of the things that, you know, in writing a travelogue, he's in some way, he'll have to be criticized, according to the technical term being the very similitude of his writing, how well it conforms to a reality, as we've just,
as we
just said. But then he takes that a step further and he decides to write a novel. And here he has complete control over his... Over the entire setting, over the characters, and over the Africa and the Malawi that he wants us to see, and it's his Malawi. And so I wonder if you could just go into and describe the main thrust of the novel.
Well, just before I do, I want to point out that it's a bit of a homecoming to him. I'm sure he was back in 2002 when he wrote The Dark Star Safari, but... since 2008, I've been going back to Malawi on a regular basis. This is getting on to 6 years now, and yet I don't share with him the same kind of feelings. What I do love is his rich and vivid descriptions. I mean, his smells and his sights and his.
You said that it is a friend of yours.
No, not at all. I've never met him. I don't know him. I have watched him evolve in his work over the years. He's a published author with 20 or more novels. In fact, that's part of the problem. This book got so much widespread review, laudatory reviews. I found one that was a bit critical. And I was a bit disturbed by that because when I read it, I was very critical. I found the plot was very far-fetched in terms of getting into Malawi and the things that will happen to you there. The characters were unidimensional, including the central figure, the hero. So
this is, sorry to stop you, this is the Lower River, right?
This is the Lower River, yes. And while as a book, it's an okay read, it's pretty gripping. And yes, I'd encourage people to read it. But if you're not familiar with the country, I think it's going to be a rather... I'm not sure you're going to enjoy it all that much. As I say, the characters are sort of unidimensional and weirdly passive. At least the hero is. The mm-hmm. other characters, at least the local village headman that takes him over, is way more calculating and conspiring and acquisitive. I guess they found it formulaic and facile and not terribly gripping or profound. But I read it knowing there was a connection with the Dark Star Safari, and in it in the Dark Star Safari he clearly admired and enjoyed the company of what he called in quotations the bare-assed local guys, like the man who poled the canoe When he left Malawi in the most unique way, he went down the Shire River in a dugout canoe, and those things are very difficult to ride in. They're very unstable. And he went from the bottom of Malawi, which sticks into Mozambique, down the Shire River into Zambezi, and then entered Mozambique through that route, a most unusual route. And I have no idea what they traced him like. But he was clearly, after all the other travels and all the other people he met, very much admiring the guy who pulled his boat down there, an ordinary guy, a simple guy, a regular guy, a guy who struggles and survives in difficult situations, you know? And in the same book, in Darkstar Safari and in The Lower River, he clearly disparages the African elites and the NGO world. And I'm totally with him on that. You want to disparage the NGO world, no problem. The majority of African elites, just to go that side, have totally betrayed the trust that Nyerere, Chissiza, Neto, Nkrumah, and all those other leaders at the independence put forward for us, more recent leaders, including, and I'll add to it, Mandela, Mbeki, and Zuma, are venal and self-enriching by comparison. And they've reinforced neocolonialism in an absolute bad betrayal of their people. So his critique of the elite Africans is I think, quite appropriate. But it's a little bit weakened by the kind of person he parodies in the novel, like the driver for the NGO and the local village headman. Yes, they may have their problems, but the big problem is way above them. He doesn't see structural problems. He's only looking around him and doing the micro description. The NGO he describes is called L'Agence Anonyme, and they don't. And I think this is a real takeoff on, of course, sans frontières, anonyme. You know, his elites are low-level beings who generally do not have the kind of power and influence he attributes to them. The elites I know have PhDs; they're very well-read and articulate, but they're also acquisitive and venal. They don't care that they got those degrees. They're still going to steal from their people. They've long ago left the villages and they have no interest. So when he picks on the village headman and the local driver, I'm a little bit sensitive to these are the kind of guys I know and I respect. I think there's a lot in there for them. Don't get me started on the NGO world. I shed no tears over the downfall of CEDA and the phony world of the NGOs. The conservative government here in Canada has called this charade out into the open and made it much easier to see the lines that delineate this. His over-the-top parody of the NGO world is, in fact, wonderful. He has the rock stars in a helicopter throwing sacks of food out to a gang of, I call them, feral kids. Kids who have been abandoned. They have no adult in the community. Seems to be hundreds of them, and they're surviving on their own. When the rock stars have finished throwing this stuff out of the helicopter, he scrambles through the kids, the hordes of kids, hoping that they'll take him away, and they just rise away. The helicopter rises up. They have no interest in him. White man, what are you doing here? We're the heroes. Don't you get involved. And then, just to add irony to irony and criticize the aid industry as well, and the local elites, as the helicopter's taking off, a motorcycle gang of local low-level chiefs, like the village headman and so on, they arrive on their little motorcycles and they grab up all the sacks that have been thrown out to the kids and walk off with them or drive off with them for their own use, and the kids are left with nothing in the end. Very big metaphor, of course, for this kind of stuff. Toro's disdain and distaste for the aid business is quite evident, and I love it for that, no problem. He's a master of vivid description. You can see and smell the places he's describing. And while much has changed in Malawi cities, and you can see sort of development with big buildings and lots of things happening, what he describes of the rural areas and how they are miserable and desperate is very much a reality of today. I think I agree with him that 50 years later, rural Africans are worse off than they were at independence in much of Africa. And certainly in the Malawi I know, there has been no change and no particular hope put forward for them. I also agree that you know, there's a whole begging mentality that goes along with the aid industry on the side, even of the elites. Of course, the poor people need anything they could get, so they look like they're begging when they're just trying to get something from you. But the rich as well, even though it's called project proposals and fancy dancing, they're begging too. And that, and it's tragic to see that that's still going on, even when you see what was going on in the 60s and 70s with development processes that were meant to bring people a bit, a sense of dignity and hope. Also, to his credit, I was very pleased to by the lack of paternalism in it. But the faults lie more on the literary side. You know, the characters are flat. They're unidimensional. It's a bit sensational. The plot is far-fetched. What is he? He was here for 4 years in Malawi as a Peace Corps. The kid builds a school and gets involved in his community, thinks that he's found paradise. And the only reason he leaves Malawi in the 60s is because his father has died and he has to go home and help the family. So he ends up as a businessman in some small town in Massachusetts. And then when that all falls apart with globalization and his marriage wreck, then he says, oh, where should I? What should I do now? Let's go back to where I was happy. And of course, so it's all metaphor. It's lovely.
Would it be fair to say that Theroux is basically interested in only in just presenting his own criticisms of the aid industry rather than really either describing the reality as it exists or in really fleshing out some sort of story?
Well, I think he's using his position as a novelist and a travel writer to make critiques without having any substance behind them, without having a lot of depth behind them, at least. They're critiques that I do agree with, but I would like to see them more profound. The NGO world, there's things going on within the NGO world that I'm sorry, I do find positive and I would agree with, but within the issue of the local elites, within, well, you know, what's missing is a global analysis. He's picking on what he sees around him as he walks through Africa without putting it into a big picture, and that's, I guess, what really upsets me. But read it, enjoy it. Dark Star Safari, Paul Theroux, 2002. Lower River, Paul Theroux, 2012. We don't get that much writing on Africa, but there's better stuff out there. Oh, well, I've got that off my chest. I would like you to look up, oh my goodness, it's a petition put out by Paul Dewar, the MP. I believe he's an Ottawa MP, Liberal, but he has over many years.
NDP, no?
He may be NDP. Yes, he is. He is NDP for sure.
I'm watching you.
Yes, use the microphone too. And he has had a very long-standing concern for what's going on in the Democratic Republic of Congo and the whole blood minerals issue. I would encourage you to go to his website. It's Stop Conflict Minerals. I don't have the URL, but if you Paul Dewar, Stop conflict minerals. You'll get there. There's a petition to sign. I think it's a very well done campaign, and I'd encourage you to be part of it. And with that, I think we'll slowly start saying goodbye to you all. This is Doug Miller here with Jean-Marc Saboteau, with
Mouloud
Idir, and Jean-Marc
Sabot.
Yeah. And Mouloud Idir, yeah, here's the old guy. He's not sensitive on all these things. Anyway, and Avi Kanji, and Avi's mom too. Nice to have you here. And we're here with Amandla, brought to you by Group for Research and Initiatives for Liberation of Africa. We'll be back next week with more news and analysis from the continent. And after this, we'd really hope that you stay tuned to Jazz Euphorium.
Voilà, merci beaucoup, Doug. Voilà, merci beaucoup Doug, c'est déjà la conclusion de l'émission Amandla pour cette semaine. Merci donc à Vic Engie pour son travail à la technique. Merci à mon collègue Jean-Marc Sobot. Voilà, moi je l'ai bien prononcé le nom, Doug Miller. Et voilà, la maman également de Evie qui nous a rendu...
What a song that still lives on and on through the years. Oh, baby, this is one of those songs. Remember, well, some of you remember. I was about 2, so I barely remember. When 4 young men came from Liverpool, England, and they took America by storm with their very special brand of music. What we decided to do, ladies and gentlemen, because, you know, growing up in the Midwest, you hear a lot of pop radio. And what we decided to do with this particular song was just show you just how R&B it could really be. But to give you an example of what we're really talking about, how soulful this song can be, we first had to show you just how it was back watching the Ed Sullivan Show. A really big show. I believe it was. But I need your imagination. Wait a minute. I do need your imagination. Come on with me, because it was black and white television, and I know most of you weren't here. But imagine yourself, 1964! We'll be right back. yeah. Oh, you're so real, baby. I wanna hold your brother. Oh, please stay with me, pretty baby. Ooh, and let me be your man. Yeah, oh, please say to me, baby, you let me me wanna.